Blog Talk Radio.
Changes are upon us. Cooler weather's on the horizon, football's in the air, and the choir has a new look. Check out the completely redesigned corporate website at www.acquire.com to see the exciting new changes for yourself. Warning, it's not your typical HR software website. And by the way, this episode of HR Happy Hour, sponsored by Acquire, industry leaders in workforce planning and analytics solutions.
Welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bowes. I'm so glad you're with us tonight. It's going to be a fantastic show tonight. I'm really excited for tonight's show. We've got a superb guest waiting in the wings, and we'll welcome her in just a minute or two to the HR Happy Hour Show. But really pleased you're with us. Looking forward to tonight's conversation. If you're listening to the show now live on air and want to get involved in the conversation tonight, please do. Your call-in number will be 646-378-1086, and please press 1 after you're connected, and we'll get you on board tonight for sure. If you're listening back to the recorded archive of the show at some later date, this episode of HR Happy Hour is being recorded live on Thursday, September 22nd, 2011. So really pleased to be back, HR Happy Hour, back with you. I'm on the West Coast right now, so I'm not quite in that typical HR Happy Hour mood, that 8 o'clock Eastern zone where many of you listeners are in, which I don't know. If I was living out here permanently on the West Coast, I'm not sure HR Happy Hour would play that well at 5 o'clock, but we'll get through it one way or another. A couple quick things. Call number again, 646-378-1086. On Twitter, if you're listening and want to hang out and participate in the back channel conversation, our hashtag, as always, HR Happy Hour. I will try to keep an eye on that during the course of the show and look for questions or comments. Many thanks to our show sponsors, of course, Acquire, Lois Melbourne and Company. Thanks so much. A couple quick other announcements, events coming up. Boy, the event calendar is just massively crowded in the HR talent recruiting space, no doubt. And so you may be sort of conferenced out, but I would be remiss if I did not mention again the upcoming HR Evolution Las Vegas event. Tickets are still on sale. There's a few more remaining. You can learn more at hrevolutionlasvegas.eventbrite.com. And the best thing about HR Evolution Las Vegas, not the best thing, but one of the great features of HR Evolution Las Vegas, if you're interested in attending the upcoming HR Technology Conference, which is less than 2 weeks away in Las Vegas, the HR Evolution Las Vegas event has the only remaining valid, active, and fantastic discount code that will work, good for $600 off the HR Technology Conference admission ticket. So if you're kind of considering making that move to HR Technology, here's what you want to do. You want to come to HR Evolution first, get your ticket through HR Evolution, grab that discount code, sign up for HR Technology Conference, get the two birds in one stone package, and make yourself a great deal. So those are my announcements, my pitch for HR Evolution and HR Technology. I'll probably make the pitch one more time before the end of the show as well. So let's get on with it. Enough of me prattling on. Let's welcome our guest to the show, a returning guest to the HR Happy Hour Show, and we're so glad she's with us. Please welcome back to the HR Happy Hour Show, HR Technology industry legend, Ms. Naomi Bloom. Naomi, welcome back to the HR Happy Hour.
Steve, it's a pleasure to be here, and I love being a legend. I just love that phrase. You just keep right on using it.
I will. Thank you, Naomi. So tonight we're going to talk about work and the future of work, and we're going to get into some more detail of what we mean by that and have a really open and interactive conversation about work, the future of work, the challenges, the opportunities, the realizations. Naomi's going to offer her insight, perspective, advice from seeing changes in the industry over the course of her career, and it should be a fascinating conversation and an open one and an interactive one, so we really do hope you participate tonight. to talk about work and the future of work with Naomi. Naomi, usually I read some bio information, right, from our guests. So, welcome to the show. Here's some bio information. So I clicked over to infobloom.us, right, to the About Naomi page. And the About Naomi page is probably 1,000 words long. It's a fantastic story, but too much for me to sort of recount, right, quickly in a 15-second intro. So maybe, Naomi, you could help just give us maybe the shorter version of the Naomi Bloom bio in history a little bit to set some context for our listeners tonight.
Sure. I started out to be a nuclear physicist. And
easy little career, right?
That's right. And if you've ever seen the TV program The Big Bang, the comedy on CBS, those were my classmates.
Wow, okay.
Okay, I know those guys. And I won't go into all the bloody details, but it was obvious after a short while that I wasn't going to be an Albert Einstein, and I persuaded myself that rather than being one of those little gray men at a little gray desk somewhere at Princeton, I would go on and do something else. And on some level, my career, I think, is a really good metaphor for the big changes that have happened in work, because when I first started working, the expectation was you went to work for a good company with good benefits, and you stayed there until you died.
Sure, yeah.
And I found just such a company right out of university. I was a programmer trainee, computer programmer trainee, at John Hancock Life Insurance, which doesn't exist anymore, but of course I do.
Right, that, right.
You know, that's an important lesson.
You outlasted this big company that potentially would have been employing you for 35 years back in
the
day.
That's exactly right. And, you know, on another level, this idea of one career, the idea then was that your employer worried about your career. There were all these career paths, and it was very well laid out. And because I had a college degree, I went into a particular track. It was such a different era. I can't even begin to tell you how different it was.
Right.
When I started, just to give the women on the line an understanding, when I started...
Yeah, I was almost going to ask you, was it tough or was it unusual breaking into that field in computer programming as a woman in back then?
There were no computer science or data processing programs at universities.
Mm-hmm.
All of that training was being done by the few large corporations that were automating for the first time.
Okay.
And they were really looking for and hiring liberal arts graduates with, linguistics, literary criticism, heavy mathematics background, and they were hiring them for these computer training programs from the top schools, from the Ivy League, from the top schools. And so in my little computer programming training program, the men were being paid $152 a week, and the women were being paid $139 a week.
Oh, no.
We all had Ivy League degrees. You know,
right.
We had everything very similar. They just paid us differently.
Right.
And when when I found out about this, you can just imagine.
Yeah.
So I went to my boss, who was a high school graduate who had been in the comptroller department. You know, they have those machines. You've probably seen them where there's like this handle and you crank it and it makes numbers.
Yes. I think
remember
I have
those?
One still. Yes.
Well,
yes.
Anyway, she had come up through the ranks and was my supervisor. And when I went to her and said, this doesn't seem right, she looked at me straight in the face and she says, but they'll have to support a family.
Yeah.
Okay. That's really the way it was.
Right. So fast forward a little bit, and so you decide to move on from there have some other opportunities. And
in
so what
my first,
that?
In the first 10 years of my work life, I must have worked for 8 different companies.
Okay.
Because
you're like a real true millennial, Naomi, bouncing around.
Yeah, that was me, right? I'm ahead of my time.
Exactly.
I got fired from 2 of them.
Okay.
I mean, flat out fired. And that's pretty distressing on many levels, especially when you're paying, student loans, you're trying to put yourself through graduate school, you don't have rent money. It's a real scary thing. And I think one of the reasons I feel so strongly for our many colleagues who are out of work or underemployed in this terrible economy, I've been there. I've been the person
right.
deciding, you know, do I eat, do I pay the rent, or do I have a phone? And the reason I got fired is also the reason I've been very successful.
Mm-hmm.
I got fired for having opinions. I got fired for asking questions. I got fired because I didn't just, you know, follow the company line. And,
right.
you know, now we talk about take risks, think out of the box, you know, be creative, be an innovator. All those things today are considered to be positive qualities.
Sure.
They were not positive qualities
not back
the
60s. Then. Yeah. Yeah.
No, absolutely
exactly.
not.
Exactly. And then eventually, Naomi, you decided, okay, this is – and I know there's some – you know, you're with the Wallace, Ron, who many of us know, have had the pleasure to meet. You know, he had a great career as NASA – I'm not doing him justice, a NASA engineer, but I'm sure he was – the way I'm describing it doesn't really portray it. But you sort of were in concert with his career as well, trying to manage that, which a lot of professionals have that challenge today as well, right, managing that dual career and the aspirations of each member of the family.
It was a huge challenge because Ron actually ended his career. I mean, the last thing was as a mission manager at NASA.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But when we first got together, I was working full time, going to graduate school for my MBA at night. In the summers, I was working part time jobs in addition to my full time job to make enough money to pay tuition come
right.
fall. Ron was in the Air Force when we first met. It was the Vietnam era, and everybody was in the military.
Sure.
And from the very beginning, we made the decision that we were going to have two careers, and some years his career would get priority, and some years my career would get priority, but we try to even it out over time.
Okay.
So, for example, when we were first married in the Boston area, we moved to California pretty much because that's what he wanted to do. And I got out there and had a hell of a time finding a job. When we left, I was in a management position at Polaroid, a lot
mm-hmm.
of people working for me. I'd really made some progress. I got out to California, and there were simply no women as senior managers in what was then data processing departments.
Right, right.
You know, we think of Silicon Valley today as a meritocracy, a hotbed of, you know, advancement for women, but it
right.
was
good
not
ideas,
that way.
You know, good ideas will win out no matter what, right?
Absolutely,
anyway.
But it wasn't
yeah.
that way in the early 70s. So my career took quite a setback in the 5 years we were in California, while Ron's, you know, really soared.
Right.
When we relocated back east, we went to Washington, it was a more balanced move. He wanted to get his PhD
sure.
in satellite communication systems theory, and I really needed to be in a different, you know, in a different setting. And the reverse happened. I mean, I went to work for American Management Systems when they were small systems consulting firm, a small custom software firm. And, you know, helped grow it to a very big firm that then went public.
Right.
And so I had 9 years with AMS. After, you know, many, many jobs in the first 10 years, I had one job, you know, one employer, a great employer, for 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really when I made the transition from having both of my feet in enterprise software on the design and development side to being much more of a management consultant, much
right.
more looking at the business problem. It was
Naomi,
a great time.
Let me do a quick reset for our folks listening tonight. This is the HR Happy Hour. My name is Steve Bowes. I'm joined by Naomi Bloom. We're just talking a little bit about Naomi's career to try to set some context for the conversation we want to have about work and sort of the changes in work. You're welcome to call in. We'd love for you to call in and participate tonight. Our call-in number tonight, 646-378-1086. Do press 1 if you want to come on board and speak to Naomi tonight, and I know you do. If you're hanging out listening and want to ask some questions or make some comments on the back channel on Twitter, HR Happy Hour is our hashtag. HR Happy Hour is our hashtag. So, Naomi, you then became sort of an independent consultant.
Right.
You created your own firm. You went out on your own in a time not dissimilar to the times we're in today, right? It was a down
economic climate.
Everyone
thought I was out of my mind.
Right. And so,
1987.
Yeah, and you know, many of us, you know, barely remember those days, Naomi. But it was a pretty grim economic time, as you've talked about, I know, before.
Well, it was a difficult time, and I was a partner, and my partners thought I had lost my mind altogether. But I had a real vision, and that vision has carried me to today. The tactics have changed. A lot about my business has changed. The mix of clients, the nature of the projects. Certainly the technology has,
sure,
you know, just gone crazy. But the mission was the mission. I really
right.
believed that human resource management, not the HR department, but the subject matter, human resource management,
mm-hmm.
what – I'm sorry?
No, go ahead, Naomi. No,
okay, I was going to say, I believed that well-done human resource management is what drives business success. And I had a vision that if we use technology in the right way, we could enable everyone to practice effective human resource management.
Right, right. So let's talk about sort of today, right? And so not unlike 1987 when you set out on your own to sort of build your own your company, build your own practice and develop your, you know, start down the path which has led to the success you've had over the years. You know, what are some of the changes, you know, that the most sort of fundamental or major changes in sort of today's world? So, you know, we want to talk tonight about the world of work and how it's changed sort of. And we know the covenant, if you will, or the contract between employer and employees is really kind of broken forever. But what does that sort of mean for today's worker? And how is it so much more challenging than it perhaps was even 15, 20 years ago?
You know, Steve, I thought about this a lot because we had discussed this topic before the call.
Right.
And it's easier to answer the question by talking about what has not changed.
Okay.
There's a fundamental set of what I call KSOCs. That's my term, my very broad term, for the human capabilities that are relevant to doing work.
Okay.
It literally stands for knowledge, skill, ability, and other deployment-related characteristics. But this is everything you can imagine, from being able to leap tall buildings in a single bound to, you know, speaking French to having the appropriate license for a particular truck. It is everything about a human being that is relevant to the doing of work. And, of course, in any given situation, what matters are the KSOCs that are necessary for that specific work.
Sure.
Well, what I've come to realize is that there's a core set of KSOCs that were important 40 years ago, and they are just as important today.
Okay.
They've changed a little bit. I mean, what, for example, one of them is to be an excellent, fast, and compelling writer.
Right.
Now, what constitutes excellent, fast, and compelling has, in fact, evolved with the technology, has evolved with the culture.
Right.
But
right. So technology and culture and some other factors maybe have conspired to mean faster, perhaps. But,
yep.
But still, at its core, these you're sort of saying that those that fundamental skill of being able to sort of translate ideas into written material or spoken material, basically effective communication skills, it's no different. It's no different today than it was
it's
50
core,
years ago.
And it is no different. And just to give you a very concrete example. Earlier this year, I did a large series of vendor briefings.
Okay.
And asked, because of the nature of the briefings, asked to have someone on the vendor side take the notes.
Okay.
So I'm getting notes taken by a wide assortment of people at various vendors. And they all come in, and I'm going through them. And it was so glaring that some of these people had not a clue what was going on in the discussion. Some took absolutely detailed, everything under the sun notes, They really didn't know enough to sort out the nuances, and that was
fine.
Yeah,
they sort of just recorded everything.
They just put everything
down. Kind of. Right, right.
Okay, other people tried to sort out the nuances, but failed miserably, and a very, very small number of people captured the essence of the discussion, captured what was really valuable in the discussion. It was all
sure.
over the mat.
Right,
but
right.
But when I was at AMS, anybody who couldn't take effective notes wouldn't have lasted a week.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Right. And maybe that's a function, and this is maybe something we can get into as well. Is some of that, right, some of those changes a function of the changing sort of technologies or expectations? Is it, I don't want to oversimplify and say, because we're all in a tweet, we all just tweet and text all day long and no one can really, people can write anymore.
I think that technology is a powerful enabler. And if you're a good writer, it helps you to reach a larger audience. It helps you to be more prolific. It helps you to add not just text, but images. And I love infographics, even though I personally, my brain doesn't work that way, so it's hard
sure.
for me to create them. But we have now the ability for much richer forms of expression. But if somebody is a grammatical illiterate, whether they're doing it in 140 characters or 140 pages, it's still trash.
Right, right. And you get the impression that, and this maybe is not true, I don't know, but like if you had trained yourself or practiced or done enough repetition and sort of you were effective at translating ideas into words, into paper, and sort of coherent sentences. If you're a good writer, it's probably be a good Twitterer, a good Facebooker.
I agree.
Right? It's probably not the other way around necessarily, but
if you're
yeah.
an effective communicator, then you can master different mechanisms for communication.
Right.
But if your thinking is muddled, your vocabulary is sparse, you have no command of the grammar, if you're just functionally illiterate, then giving you a power tool that speeds up the nonsense
right.
doesn't strike
right.
me as particularly helpful. Let me give you another example where I think there's a core capability which
right.
morphs over time based on changing culture, changing tools,
And before you go into the second example, Naomi, would you say, let me just one quick follow-up on sort of the communication and the writing particularly. Would you say, that's a fundamental, part of what we wanted to talk about on the show tonight is what are some of the things to really that workers of today can try to do to sort of more future-proof themselves, more sort of protect themselves a little bit, in the tough economy and whatnot. And certainly effective communication, effective writing, you'd have to call that one of those really key factors that if you can do that.
Absolutely. And I would under the banner heading of communication, I would put writing, I would put speaking, I would put the ability to persuade, the ability to paint a picture,
right.
to provide context. So communication is a broad topic, and there's a lot that goes into effective communication. But I think that is a core capability, and it was then. And it is now, and I believe it will be same in 40 years.
Okay, so boom, effective communication, we've got it. So what the next thing you'd say that, boy, I've seen this for my 30-year career, and it's still true today as it was back when I started.
The next I would put thinking.
Okay.
And under that banner heading would go things like critical thinking skills, pattern recognition, the ability to sort through erroneous logic, the ability to critique and to be able to take something apart and put it back together again, knowing it is either right or it is wrong. And I have to say that being able to think requires focus, requires it can't coexist with ADD.
Yeah, a little bit of discipline, perhaps.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I had an interesting experience with a group of very young colleagues recently where they were all sitting in a group and everybody had their iPods and was listening to music.
Right.
And at the same time that they were listening to music, they were having a design review. And they were all listening to different music. Now, I personally can't do that. But I watched them do it, and I was blown away by their ability to stay focused and crisp and really work on something, intellectually work on something, while having music pass through their brains.
Yeah.
So your way of focusing and being disciplined may not look like my way.
Right, right.
What I care about is the result.
Right, and I think that's a great point, Naomi, because, right, there are different ways that we can sort of adapt our environments, process information, sort of our sense-making process is different, right, from our own unique perspective, our capability, focus, I don't know. I mean, sometimes, and it's contextual as well, like sometimes, even today, just turning on TV, right, the news channel, if you turn on CNN, right, it used to be, you're not just getting the news, right, you're getting a sort of a cacophony and other information coming out at you from that screen. There are tickers and bullets.
And Steve, that's one very big difference that I see.
Yeah.
Folks of my generation were trained, were taught in a more single-threaded way.
Right.
And I personally have to have a fair amount of quiet to think. But that's not everybody. And we
right.
do have generations behind me who are more multi-threaded, more multi-processing. And when I see good work emerge, I frankly don't care if they were, you know, playing video games while producing it.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
I will say that there are not many people who are capable of doing three things at once and getting any of them done well.
Yeah, that's a great point, Naomi. I want to just pause for 1 second. I knew we had a lot of material prepared for this show. We're not going to get to probably half of it, but that's fine because, maybe we'll have to book a return appearance, Naomi, to get to all the stuff we talked about and prepared for the show. But let me just do a quick reset for the folks listening. This is the HR Happy Hour. My name's Steve Bowes. I'm joined by Naomi Bloom. We're talking about work and skills. Naomi's term is KSOX, knowledge, skills. Is it aptitude or ability
knowledge,
in your term?
Skill, ability, and other deployment-related characteristics.
Characteristics, right. So I'm joined by Naomi Bloom. Our call-in number, we'd love for you to get on board tonight and speak to Naomi, 646-378-1086. Press 1 if you want to get on the line tonight. Folks, there's quite a few folks who are on hold and just listening, and that's great. But if any of you guys want to get on board, just press 1 on your phone, and I'll open up your line. On Twitter, of course, our hashtag is HRHappyHour, and we're keeping an eye on that as best we can as well. So hello to everybody out there on the Twitter stream tonight. And I see some good friends of the show, so thanks everybody who's listening and tweeting away. So. Naomi, we had a lot to get to, so I want to just make sure we hit on a couple of the things that
Steve, before we go on to something else, it was
sure.
something else that I thought was important. Because people are going to be working, 40 years, 45 years?
Sure,
the economy is lengthening that runway quite a bit for many people.
Right.
There's no way to prepare and anticipate what your career will be like 40 years out.
Right.
I have a friend who's an orthopedic surgeon. You know, they started out doing surgery with their hands. Then they went to surgery with these little microscopic kinds of things. Now it's robotics, and they don't even touch the patient.
Wow.
Okay?
Right.
Many
sure.
doctors who were really good hands-on surgeons were not able to make the transition. Okay?
Yeah.
So at the heart of everything we are talking about tonight is being a lifelong learner. It's recognizing that changes are coming. It's getting in front of them. It's being disciplined about learning. It's never, never, never getting comfortable.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I love that point for a couple of reasons. One, because I just think it makes a lot of sense, and I agree with it. But two, the illustration, the example you gave of the surgeon wouldn't be what would initially come to mind when we have these conversations or at least think about technology and advancements in technology and automation that have disrupted industries and impacted careers, right? We typically think, where does our mind go, right? At least for me, anyway, my simple mind goes to maybe an auto worker or, you know, someone just processing data, not really analyzing it. You know, you don't think of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, an orthopedic surgeon, high skill, high training, high value kind of a role, but even those kinds of roles, right, are impacted by changes in technology as well as it just advances that make things perhaps more efficient and repeatable. So
I think that all of us, every single one of us, regardless of our education, regardless of the type of work that we do, every single one of us has to deal today with a world that is changing far faster than the world of the 50s and 60s.
Right. Right. And that
speed of change, coping with that speed of change, is, I think, another essential quality.
Yeah, and right, so that's where it gets tricky, right? Because if we say to ourselves, boy, we acknowledge, and everyone I think does, or most people, right, that technology and the widespread connection and broadband connectivity through smartphones all over the world and all these things, right, all these massive changes in social networks, whatever the drivers are, right, that are producing these massive shifts and changes in work, and we can't predict them, right? It's difficult for anybody to get ahead of them unless you really, no one can. So you know, I guess as we talked about earlier in the show, it's those sort of fundamental things that are kind of timeless that you really need to rely on in order to, quote-unquote, future-proof yourself and your career.
Let me give you another example.
Sure.
Let's talk about good manners. I'm not talking about the specific rules of etiquette, okay?
Right.
I'm talking about just the broader topic of good manners. If a person has good manners, it will show up on Twitter. It will show up in how they write a blog post. It will show up in how they enter a room, how they attend a meeting, be it a virtual meeting, be it a telepresence meeting. It will show up as they cross cultures. They may make a faux pas because they're unfamiliar with the rules of Kazakhstan.
Right, right.
But good manners will carry them through. Okay? And I think that there really are these core capabilities, good manners, lifelong learning, effective communications, critical thinking skills, and more than critical thinking, the ability to categorize and visualize and classify and generalization and abstraction and all of that. I mean, there is really a core capability here that if you are a master of it, if you have that, you have a very sound foundation upon which to build. My husband, as I mentioned earlier, was a mission manager actually for search and rescue programs at NASA. And Ron was educated in engineering at a time when engineers really didn't get liberal arts. They really didn't get that foundation. They got much more of a vocational education, bachelor's, master's, and PhD. And I've watched Ron apply himself as a lifelong learner to learning the things that he didn't get in school, you know, art and theater and, geology and geography and all the stuff that I got exposed to. But his core capabilities carry the day.
Yeah, I think that's a great analogy and an interesting one, and maybe something we might not have a lot of time to get into, but sometimes I think about that from a sort of training, you talked about lifelong learning and education, and one of the big, I read this really long piece today in Business Week about trying to assess the reporting on sort of the relative success or lack of success of sort of governmental and sort of quasi-public association-sponsored job retraining programs and their sort of effectivity in putting people back to work, right? And sometimes – and some of the examples in there, though, were similar to what you described that Ron went through, that perhaps he had been brought up or trained and worked for a long time in a highly technical field, but some of the skills required to make that kind of mid-career shift or late, even a late career shift require a different set of skills that aren't always easy. I guess my point is they're not always easy to come by no matter what pursuit you're going down the path of trying to acquire those skills, whether formal or sort of informal.
You know, once upon a time there was a belief system that said a broad liberal education was the foundation for all further learning.
Right.
And if we go back to the classical period, to the Greeks and the Romans, everybody was trained in, you know, when I say everybody, of course it was seven people. Everybody else was a slave. But the seven guys got a really good education.
Putting
in
up
logic,
the aqueduct.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that idea of learning, having this foundation in the classics, was still had a hold on the educational system when I was coming up. I don't know what's gone wrong. I really don't. Mm-hmm. I'm encountering the children of friends and now the grandchildren of friends who have had no foreign language training, have minimal, and they're graduating from high school without a foreign language, with minimal mathematics. They're getting into the kinds of colleges that I guess used to be advertised in the back of matchbooks, and they think, you know, well, gee, I'm educated. I have a bachelor's degree from no-name
right.
university with, you know, remedial courses. I think we've lost our way educationally in this country.
Yeah.
And employers are, you know, kind of left holding the bag.
Yeah, and I guess that probably would make for a good, foundationally would make for a good discussion we might be able to do sort of a whole nother show on, which is really sort of the educational system and its relationships, right, to employment and to the organizational model. Because you spoke, and what also made me think about this earlier in the show is when you talked about how your employer, one of your early employers, specifically had to train for the skills that they needed, right? Because the schools weren't producing graduates in at least maybe at all, or certainly not in a volume that they required, right? For a changing in new technology,
correct?
Which in many ways is the problem we have now, at least to some extent. Some of the problems, certainly the quote unquote skills gap that we hear people talk about here in the U.S. is largely due to that issue. But yet we don't see as many, or maybe it's just I don't know about them, and maybe I can find a guest who can talk about this a little bit more intelligently. It doesn't seem as likely or as often that corporate America, or not even just corporate America, corporations in general, are thinking more lines of, we've got these really hard jobs to fill, we've got these skills we can't find, we should just go out there and create them. We'll develop the people. They're rather sort of looking to schools and governments.
When John Hancock put me through, I believe it was 13 weeks, but my memory may be flawed, of programmer training, I was paid the whole time.
Right.
13 weeks. Big, big expense. They expected me to stay there the rest of my life.
Right.
In which case, the amortization of that expense made all the sense in the world.
It was a great deal, yeah. Yeah.
Okay? I'm sure I'm one of the very few people that ever left. Okay? I mean, many years later, colleagues that I had been in that training program with were still there.
Right.
So.
Right.
But
that's
in today's world, why would an employer invest in 10, 12, 16 weeks of fully compensated training if you're going to pack up your marbles after a year?
Yeah,
and go
that's
to the
a
guy down
point.
The street who didn't make the investment, who now gets the benefit of it.
Right, right. And that maybe it's a game of chicken to some extent, right? Why stick your neck out to do that and to have that investment walk out the door while your competitor snatches it up and takes advantage of all the investment you've put into that staff? It's a good point. I'd love to maybe get someone more well-versed in these concepts to come on the show and talk about it sometime. I think it would be a fun show. So let me just do a quick pause, quick reset, Naomi. This is the HR Happy Hour show. My name's Steve Bowes. I'm joined with my guest tonight is Naomi Bloom. We're having a very fun and lively conversation about work, the changing nature of work, the employment contract or lack thereof, and just kicking it around. It's a lot of fun. Our call-in number, 646-378-1086. Please do give us a call. If you want to get on board, ask a question, make a comment, tell me I'm wrong, tell Naomi she's crazy. It's up to you. We'll take it tonight. On Twitter, of course, our hashtag HRHappyHour, and we're keeping an eye on that as well. So thanks for everybody who's out there tonight and listening and tweeting along. So, Naomi, the show's going really fast, so I know we're going to start running short of time, as always, but I had a couple I'll throw out some of the questions we had sort of talked about and I had sent over to you. Maybe just throw them out a little more rapid fire and just get your comments on them. I'd love your observations on them. Here's the first one I had in the list. Is everyone today a knowledge worker?
Yes.
And so
yes,
how's that
the,
changed?
The guy who comes and does the gardening here has to have a whole bunch of certifications that he is qualified to handle some of the chemicals they use.
Okay.
You know, and he's an hourly worker, does not speak English particularly well, and, you know, he's a knowledge worker because he's got to know the technology, if you will, with which he happens to be working. My housekeeper is a knowledge worker. She's got to know that you don't use Windex on oil paintings.
Okay, right, right.
Okay?
You don't? Really?
So,
I should write that down.
You don't. So, I think what's happened is all work has been infused with a greater requirement for knowledge. All work. And that makes us, on some level, all knowledge workers. That makes us, on some level, necessary to be lifelong learners because that infusion of knowledge is not static.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we are all knowledge workers.
And that changes not only work, our individual work, it changes management a little bit too, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's no longer sufficient to be able to make sure everybody showed up and sat where they're supposed to sit for the required amount of time and produced some number of widgets per spec, right? That's all changed too.
It has, and I think that one of the challenges right now is that we do have lots of managers of a certain mindset who are thoroughly intimidated by the changing nature of workers and the changing nature of work, and they're not quite sure what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
Need a manager to do the schedule when I have software that does the schedule.
Right, right. So the knowledge worker question I wanted to throw out, and here's another one, Naomi, I wanted to make sure I asked you. Should everyone, whether they're, you know, just coming into the workforce and established in the company, perhaps out there looking for work right now, is everyone an entrepreneur today?
Yes.
In your mind?
Yes. And actually always has been. At least the ones who have succeeded.
Okay.
So if you think about the United States, and my apologies to our international guests, but the U.S. was built by immigrants who chose to come here. Some stayed behind, some left. What was different about the ones who left? In many cases, they were risk takers. They had a dream. They had more energy. They had more something. Otherwise, they would have stayed home.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
You know, I mean, that's just the reality of the DNA of our country.
Okay.
And it continues to be the DNA because it continues to be refreshed by new immigration. With that in mind, I think that not only are we all knowledge workers, but we are all entrepreneurs. Now, I may be an entrepreneur on a small scale. You've just taken on a new job,
all right?
And you're working for quite a large company. We don't have to mention any names, but it's a large company and a successful company.
Sure.
And you need to find your place. No one's going to give you a position description down to the third decimal place and say, just do these three things and here's the form to fill out. Doesn't work that way anymore.
Right, absolutely, and that's quite true. Right, in lots of places. Right, and the ability to adapt to that, as you said, that lifelong learning aspect, that ability to take risks, those are the things. Right, that if you're not comfortable doing those things, it's quite likely you might struggle sort of in the modern organization of today.
You know, one of the things I always regretted was that girls were not encouraged to play team sports when I was growing up. That really didn't come along until later. But I think playing team sports, you quickly get used to the idea that not everybody's a star, that there are no winners on a losing team, and there are no losers on a winning team. And I think that notion of how to work, how to be both an entrepreneur, but also to be collaborative and work as part of a team, they can sound like opposing notions.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, they are both essential, and especially in an environment of multi-jobs, many jobs over time, working on many projects, even if you're working for the same company, we're constantly forming and unforming and reforming various kinds of teams. it's not the same group for the rest of your life. And so on the one hand, you need to be entrepreneurial. On the other hand, you need to be intensely collaborative.
Right. Yeah. At the same time. Right.
At
more
the
or less,
same
right?
time.
Right. It's an interesting thing, and you hinted something, Naomi, something that I thought about some as well. This the sort of no losers on the winning team and no winners on the losing team kind of thing. That whole, you know, hinted at sort of that last generational kind of mindset, or really, you know, sort of my generation and the one just after. I'm, you know, it's shocking. You know, I have such a youthful appearance, but I'm probably a little older than many people suspect. But although I won't admit it. I think of that trophy for participation. Every kid gets a trophy, right, in the soccer league. I'm convinced that has nothing to do at all with kids and everything to do with parents, right?
That's exactly right.
And the kids get the rap for it. The kids who grow up getting the trophy for every game they ever played get the bad rap and the bad sort of reputation, right, for always having to have a trophy. But it wasn't their fault. They're not the ones who ran down to the trophy shop and made those trophies up. So that always bugged me a little bit. But Naomi, I wanted to ask you another quick question, and then we'll sort of, you know, start trying to pull some things together, and just we're going to run out of time anyway in about 15 minutes. I'd love for you to comment a little bit about sort of commitment. But what I mean by commitment is, you know, whether it's technology, just the availability of human capital and talent in lots more places than it ever used to be, whether it's knowledge work and design, you know, development, you name it, whatever kind of work it is, right? The ability to find talented people to do that kind of work anywhere in the world, right, is just massively grown in the last 25, 30 years. I'd love for you to comment a little bit about sort of the commitment that it sort of takes for folks these days that they really ought to understand and appreciate in order to keep themselves relevant and keep themselves competitive in this day and age.
When I'm doing work with a software vendor's design team, I'm typically in the room with a group of people who may be in their mid to late 20s. There might be a 35-year-old architect floating around, but it's a very young crowd. They've never heard of me. They have
right.
no idea why management said, this woman is coming. They take a look at me and they see their grandmother.
Right.
So I walk in and I'm already in a 2-foot-deep hole.
Okay, right.
Okay? And if I am not immediately relevant, if I am not up to the second, if I can't demonstrate to them value right away, I'm out of my ear. Doesn't
right.
matter what the boss thinks. And so there's nothing more motivating. There's no stronger impetus for keeping yourself up to date, keeping yourself fresh, than that competitive challenge. And that should be a competitive challenge that everyone listening this evening or whoever listens to this takes very personally. Because for each and every one of us, there is someone in Bulgaria. There is someone in India. There is someone in Brazil. There is someone in China who doesn't have what we've had
right.
and thinks they should. Nowhere is it written that the United States is entitled by fiat or act of God to the perpetually high standard of living to which we've all become accustomed.
Right, right.
And so I think we need to be hungry. I think we need to be very painfully aware of the competitive landscape, that is a global human capital competitive landscape, and not get lazy.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, and perhaps, you know, and I agree with you, Naomi, and I think, you know, for the folks who are, you know, likely to listen to this show or as a podcast later on, we're probably resonating with them because quite honestly, folks who are listening at night to a live, you know, call-in
exactly.
show about human resources topics, they kind of get it. Or they really have completely run out of other productive things to do. It's one or the other. But they get it, and so we sort of caught them. So perhaps for this audience, I guess the backside of that question would be, what about sort of keeping it in balance? So, like, we're connected. We know we have to work harder. We know we have to think we have to think more creatively and just be smarter, right? The competition's relentless, whether it's inside our organization, the competitor down the road, or in some other country. So, and we've got the iPhone with this 24/7, right? And I know, I'll show of hands on the Twitter stream who sleeps next to their iPhone, because you know you do out there.
And frankly,
how do you
many
keep that
of us,
in balance?
Many of us, myself included, the vast majority of us are not geniuses. The vast majority of us are quite ordinary.
Right, no doubt.
And so, you know, how do you have a life? How do you balance it all somehow?
Yeah,
I think that's what you're asking.
Yeah, I am. So, I mean, I know you do, you know, we know you do a good job of it, but what are some of your things you've learned over the years? Perhaps even when you were still sort of fighting and scrapping for clients or opportunities,
oh, yeah.
when it must have felt difficult to step back and say, if I don't keep after this, you know, I'm going to lose and I won't be relevant.
And, you know,
what are some
was,
of your
it,
things you've done?
My husband would tell you I haven't done a particularly good job of balancing life and work and all the other things that are supposed to be balanced. I've missed birthdays and bar mitzvahs and weddings. And, you know, if I have any regret at this stage of my life, it's that I was less than present in the lives of friends and family when I really should have been. That said, I am a very ambitious woman, and not everybody is that ambitious, and there's no reason they should be. So
right.
I think the first thing is you have to know yourself. You have to know yourself. Mark Benioff is not worried about his work-life balance, if I may use
sure.
him as an example.
Yeah,
okay?
No, well, right. So
he's
I
tweeting
point,
24
though.
Hours a day. I'm sure he has a life, but he's not agonizing over his work-life balance.
Right.
He's just living, okay? So one trick I have learned that seems to work pretty well is using a 2 years out calendar.
2 years, okay, sure.
2 years out. So right now I've got 2012 and 2013. First thing I do is put down the dates for HR Tech.
Okay.
The next thing I do is block vacations. You know, the family time, holiday time, you know, and everybody has different needs for have a different idea about vacation, but
right.
I block my vacations. They go on the calendar, and they are sacred.
And so
I think, you know, I just got back from 2 weeks in France. Ron had he had such full attention for 2 weeks that he's exhausted.
So he was ready,
you know,
for you to get back to the grind?
Yeah, I mean, I would spend, while we were on vacation, I would spend two and a half hours early morning online.
Okay.
I'd spend a couple of hours at night online. The rest of the day we were touring and, you know, dining out and drinking wine and having a swell time. But I had to put in those hours or I'd come home, it'd be a disaster.
Right, and some might play devil's advocate, Naomi, and say, well, then you're not really, you don't know how to disconnect. You don't know how to, you don't truly have quote-unquote balance if you can't go on vacation and not work in the morning and work at night. You know, that would be, I guess, what someone might respond to that kind of a schedule.
And that someone might have a very valid point for somebody else.
Right, right.
But you know, I think the bottom line here is it's your life, it's a one-off, it's a custom software project, okay?
Right.
We're not adapting a package. It's a custom software project.
Right.
And everybody has to figure this out for themselves. I can tell you there are no easy answers. You can't run a balance sheet day by day or week by week. It doesn't work that way. But I think it's a bloody miracle that after, you know, 39 going on 40 years of marriage. I've been on the road for, you know, 90% of the time. Ron might think that was great.
Yeah.
Some other
right,
guy
right.
might have wanted me home more.
Yeah, there was someone, I forgot who it was, someone I was talking to recently, one of the road warriors, you know,
uh-huh.
kind of in the space, you know, that we all know. And he was telling me he'd been home for a couple of weeks, which was unusual for him, and then it was getting near the end of the 2 weeks, and his wife said to him, you know, why don't you go on that trip a day or two early? It's fine. Just go ahead, go. She was ready for it to get back on the plane, you know, as after 12 or 13 days home. That was about it. So there's definitely some truth truth to that. So Naomi,
sounds
quick
like
reset.
It sounds like we're adding to our list of essential core KSOCs, self-awareness.
Yeah. It does sound like it. I mean, I do think you've got to – but that ability to be – you know, it's tough these days, and we're definitely not have time to get into this. You know, it's tough to chase opportunities for lots of people here in the U.S. due to some sort of macroeconomic circumstances, right? You know, real estate market has been terrible for a long time. In certain areas of the country, it's been really, really brutal. And so some people are sort of landlocked right now,
mm-hmm.
you know, through no – really through no fault of their own.
Sure.
And that is certainly a challenge, but that ability to be flexible, to be mobile, to be adaptable, whether it's being able to get on a plane or to move or to be able to, as you said, you know, I'll do the 2 or 3 hours early in the morning. So that enables me to do other things. And in your case, it enabled you to tour and do wine tastings or whatever, you know, you were doing in France. But for others, it might be to get to the soccer game or get to the baseball
sure.
game or volunteer at a kid's school, whatever the case may be.
Ron and I lived apart at two different times in our lives. We lived in different cities.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, commuted, and it was certainly not ideal. It was certainly not easy. And we worked hard at not losing touch with each other. And this was before cell phones and before email and before we had all of today's tools for being constantly in touch.
Yeah. I know, that's sort of another aside of it. We must have been the most helpless people in the world, right, before cell phones and, you know, before you could, like, just get answers to any question in the world, right, in your hand with you all the time. It's remarkable how in just a short amount of time we've become so dependent on
that. I mean, you had to know how to
crush.
Spell. Now I can just look it up on Google when I'm not sure.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing is water bottles. Like, I just don't remember 20 years ago everybody walking around with a water bottle hydrating all the time. Like, were we all just thirsty all the time back then? That's got nothing to do with this show, but it bugs me a little bit. Last couple of minutes of the show, this is the HR Happy Hour show. My name is Steve Bowes. I'm joined by Naomi Bloom. It's been a great conversation, kind of a little bit around the bend a little bit, but lots of fun, lots of great insight and stories from Naomi, so we appreciate her taking the time on her schedule that we know we had to elbow our way into because we did not book this appearance 2 years ago. I know that. So thank you, Naomi, for taking the time to be with us tonight, which is certainly a busy time of year in your business.
Steve, this has been a pleasure, and I'd be happy to come back if you invite me.
Absolutely, Naomi. We've got a couple minutes left, but absolutely. We'll have to make this an annual
appearance. We might even talk about technology.
We could
HR.
Do that. We could talk about HR and management and, you know, discipline and things like that. It'd be fantastic. I think this stuff tends to be a little more interesting, but we could go either way. We had Bill on a couple weeks ago as well, and so I joked with him about Bill Cudick, about his annual appearance on the show, and so we'll have to maybe we'll get the two of you together to have a little discussion at some point.
It would be
a lot of fun.
We might need to put
a little extra time on the show. So, Naomi, just a couple of quick things. Your blog, infobloom.us, of course.
Correct.
I'd love for you to comment a little bit about your, in the last couple of minutes we have, just your personal observations with blogging, with social in general, and what it's sort of meant for you in your business, your career, and just maybe even personally, what it's meant the last couple of years.
First of all, it's been fantastic. It's been absolutely fantastic because when you're blogging, there are no barriers between you and your reader. There's not an editor. There's not a monthly production schedule. I mean, I'd written for magazines. I'd
sure.
been published widely. But blogging has an immediacy to it that is just phenomenal. The other thing that's been so interesting to me is that between blogging and tweeting and being more present in the online world, I have I've been able to interact with a couple more generations of younger colleagues from whom I'm learning tremendously.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, look, you can go play Farmville and waste a lot of time online.
You can.
You absolutely can. But you can also look at these opportunities, these tools, in a very productive way. And frankly, my time is too valuable to spend playing Farmville. I would much rather interact with actual human beings. But, you know, where social tech takes me into a world that is useful and productive and a source of learning, I'm very supportive.
Right. Right. Naomi, well, it's been great. Love the blog. It's great to see you out there online and sort of adopting and sort of actually leading in a way, leading by example and to some extent in the adoption of these tools for some of the folks that you deal with and the clients that you advise. So I think it's fantastic. And anyway, certainly my great pleasure to have you on the show, Naomi, and thanks so much again for taking the time tonight.
Thanks for having me. Good
great.
Night.
We'll see you. We will see you soon at HR Tech, Naomi, in a couple weeks.
Yep.
Thanks. That's it from the HR Happy Hour. I really appreciate everyone listening tonight. We'll be back next Thursday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. Thank you so much, and I will see you next week. Good night, everyone.
This episode of HR Happy Hour was sponsored by Acquire, makers of leading workforce planning and analytic solutions. Think workforce modeling was just an HR term? Uh-uh. We take modeling to a whole new level. Check out our very own Acquire models on our new corporate website at www.acquire.com. No stock photography allowed here. This episode of HR Happy Hour was sponsored by Acquire.
All right. Thank you so much, Naomi. Really appreciate you taking the hour tonight. It was fantastic, and thanks again.
Oh, you're welcome. We're by ourselves now?
Yeah, we do. The show stopped streaming. There's a couple folks on the line, but their lines are muted, so it's just you and I talking. This does make the recorded archive, though, so be mindful of that. But, again, thank you so much for being on tonight.
Oh, no, this was very enjoyable. Helping people to plan for a very long career where their employer is not going to be worrying about it.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
It's an important topic.
Yeah, and I think we talk around about getting into it at the next level, as you did tonight, to I think it's what's helpful, right? It's one thing to say, oh, your employer doesn't care about you anymore, but well, what does that mean? What does that mean for you? What should you do? What should you be thinking about? And I think we got a lot of that out tonight, and I thought that was good.
Well,
so great. So
I was curious. If there's an opportunity to do this again, it would be my pleasure.
Absolutely. We will book it. We will get it on the schedule. I'd love to. And what we'll do is also, you're about 15 minutes or so after we're done, the archive becomes available. It's that same link that I provided to you initially, and I'll tweet it out again, and I can email it to you as well. And that's where anyone could go and listen back to the replay and things like that. So
is it a different link for each show, or are they all there?
Yeah. Each show gets its own. There's one link that's the main show page,
uh-huh.
And then each individual episode gets a dedicated link as well. So
got it. Okay.
I'll send you the dedicated link to this particular episode, and then, if you wanted to share it or just so you know where it is,
terrific.
I'll send it to you.
All right. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you, Naomi. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.